Joining me right now, very, very honored to have Jessie Diggins join us. Brave Enough is her brand new book. I believe it comes out here next week. She's kind enough to talk about not only her skiing career, but some of the stories she brings up in the book. Jessie, thank you very much. I really appreciate the time.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure.
Glad to be here.
Where are you at right now?
I'm just recovering after we had a really hard, slushy race in Drammen, Norway. And now I'm on the recovery train a little bit ahead of this last final push. We've got 6 races in 9 days coming up.
Wow.
Starting next weekend. So, yeah, it's going to be crazy. But, just sort of laying low and recovering a little.
And I will mention here, you've been racing. You've gotten third in Italy and Germany as an individual team. You got in Lillehammer, you were in second in December. But, boy, I mean, that is going to be – I imagine you're going to be pretty tired after all that.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it's incredible. Earlier this year we finished up the tour of Scandinavia and it was also 6 races in 9 days, and it's a big effort. It's a big push, but it's also this really cool adrenaline ride. You know, you're racing almost every single day, you're traveling in between, you're at different venues, and every day presents a totally unique challenge. So it's really fun. It's like being on one big thrill ride.
Of course, everyone knows you from the moment from the 2018 Olympics in Pyeongchang, the first ever cross-country gold medal for women's team sprint. You were with Keegan Randall was your teammate there. And you've written this book to talk a little bit about this, because it is truly, it's one of those moments that happens in sports. And I know your perspective is very different than the rest of us, but it's one of those moments where, you've become iconic, that in 100 years, people are going to look back at that Olympics, and your moment will be the moment people remember from that.
I mean, that's just mind-blowing to me, because I think, you know, you're just going out and doing your job and racing your race and going as hard as you can. And of course you are dreaming big and you realize it's the Olympics, you know, it's the biggest stage ever. And there's so much pressure and hype and excitement and nerves. But I think, you know, crossing the finish line, it didn't even sink in that we had won the Olympics. It just felt like the feeling of exhilaration when you cross the finish line of any race. And so I think it really didn't dawn on me until I got back to the United States that spring, realizing how big that moment felt and how much it meant to everyone. And because you can feel sort of disconnected when you're, you know, literally half a world away and in totally different time zones. But coming back home, it was so cool to see how that moment felt to all many different families, kids, skiers. That was really humbling, for sure.
Your book, Brave Enough, once again, is going to be a sale. I believe it comes out here on the 10th. You wrote with Todd Smith. I love the beginning of your book, because not only does it give you a great insight into your family life, I love the chapter you have on Thunder Bay, I think what makes you very relatable is the fact that you are very relatable. And you talk about your experiences at the family cabin. I've got a family cabin as well, and it is just amazing how – as I was reading your chapter, I just kept thinking to myself of my cabin, that those 2 to 3 weeks every year you get to go spend with your family at a family cabin, those memories somehow supersede all the rest of those memories of your youth.
Yeah, isn't that just like the quintessential Minnesota upbringing, right?
Yeah.
Like getting outdoors, being with your friends, running around, like riding your bikes everywhere, like spending time at the cabin. And I feel so lucky to have had that experience and to develop such a love and appreciation for just getting outside, playing and adventuring and exploring. And I feel so fortunate. And it was really fun to tell, you know, not just the sort of Olympic glory type moments, but the backstory and what makes me who I am. And you know, the fun moments, but also the challenging moments as well. It was really important to me to give the reader the whole picture.
Well, and you talk in the relatability of it. I mean, it really is. I mean, I have a daughter who's 7th grade, and, you know, she's not cross-country skiing. She's soccer. But I love that. Like, do I really want to go practice 6 days a week? You know, those moments you have. But you seem to definitely have an affinity for cross-country skiing that showed up at a very young age.
Yeah, I think you know, I got to thank my parents for that one. I just inherited you know, their skill sets and their love of the sport. And I did so many sports as a kid, and I loved that I got the chance to do them all. And it was clear that, you know, I love all these other sports, but cross country skiing, just, I had this connection to the sport and this just epic love for the sport itself and the activity and just being outside with my friends and skiing all these different trails. I hope that is a relatable thing for everyone, because everyone has an activity, whether it's a sport or a hobby or something that they're just so passionate about, where they're like, yeah, this is my thing.
You get into, you had an eating disorder, and you actually talk about it for multiple chapters, including talking about your experience with the EMILY program. That must have been, I mean, that's always difficult when people have something like that to talk about this, but you write about it extensively because you want to make, you know, help people that go through this. It was your senior year of high school that all of a sudden you had an eating disorder that developed.
Yeah, you know, like I said earlier, it was important to me to show, you know, the bumps in the road and the hard moments as well as the great moments. And I found that, you know, it is scary and hard to share the unglamorous parts of my story, but in vulnerability, there is strength. And this is something that a lot of people deal with. You know, statistically speaking, everybody knows somebody at some point who either has had an eating disorder or will have one or will go through body image struggles. I mean, I think everyone can relate to the feeling of not feeling super confident or loving their body at some point in their life. And for me, it became, you know, it was a way of dealing with stress. And at first it started out as a coping mechanism, and then my eating disorder, you know, took over my life. And I was able to, you know, get help, get treatment at the EMILY program, and get a lot of support from my family. And it was important to me to write about, you know, here's how I got into my eating disorder. Here were, you know, the warning signs, and here's how I got out of it. And I'm hoping that, you know, it's not the entire book. It's, you know, like, it wasn't my entire life. It was part of my life and something that I went through, but it didn't define my life. In that same way, it's part of the book. It doesn't define the book, but I really hope that those chapters can be a really good resource and sort of help people learn more about, here's what it's really like inside the mind of someone struggling with an eating disorder. And in that same category, any sort of addiction, you know, it's that same struggle. And here's how, you know, the support that really helped me. So I'm hoping it can really help athletes and parents and coaches and friends and teammates.
Brave. There's a difference between, you know, being successful on in a sporting event and then being able to take that and then trying to help other people to avoid, you know, problems that you have had. I think that is amazingly brave. And I know that was those are difficult chapters that you talk about. You did get out of that with a lot of help and a lot of support. You made the decision at 19 to be a professional cross country skier. I've talked to other athletes, pro athletes. The change, they say, when you make, especially on a sport like it, one of the Olympic sports, and you decide you're going to dedicate yourself to this, they say that change immediately, that you're in a very different world, that you're approaching it at a much different level. Talk about those early days when you said, I'm going pro on this. I'm going to, you know, you obviously went to the U.S. Olympic team. I think in 2012 was your first year on that team. Talk about that jump, because, I mean, that is a huge difference between skiing in high school or even skiing at college and then all of a sudden going pro.
Yeah, it is a big jump, because suddenly it's not just this awesome sport and a hobby that you love, but it's your job as well. It's your life. It's, it's, you know, it's how you support yourself. And it's really, it's, you know, I'm not going to say it's all you have, because I'm more complex than that. I have other areas of my life that I focus on and other things I do, but it is your primary objective and everything revolves around it, and getting the workout done, getting the training done, that has to come first. And so it is this big shift, and some parts of learning how to be a professional are little things, just like, you know, eat, drink, dry clothes after a workout, like making sure you are prepared, that you have everything you need to make the workout and the recovery afterwards go smoothly. But I think, it's just little changes that add up and make you realize, okay, like, being a professional requires a little more sacrifice and a little more attention to detail. But I was actually okay with that. I was so on board with that because I've always been someone who likes having all their eggs in one basket. You know, I don't want to be half in, half out on a few things. I want to be all in on one thing and do it as well as I possibly can. And so that's sort of the attitude I adopted was, all right, like if I'm going to do this, I'm going to go for it. I'm going to go all in and give it everything I have and see how far I can take it. And that way, you know, if I win or if I lose, I can look back and honestly say, wow, like I gave this my absolute best effort. I tried as hard as I could and I'll never be wondering what if. Like I never want to have to ask myself that. I never want the what if question lingering in my head.
And it's not cheating yourself. I love the chapter because 96 isn't 100. You know, because you do something I've had other friends do where they do – you were roller skiing. You were going to 100K in one day and then you discover at the end, oh, we actually didn't go. You were 4 kilometers short and you're like, well, we got 4 more kilometers to do.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, every summer I pick one big epic challenge. So the, you know, roller skiing 100 kilometers in one day, it took, you know, 6.5 to 7 hours. And so you've been skiing for 6.5 hours. You're super tired. You think you're done and you look down at the GPS and your watch and you're like, oh, no, what have I done? You know, like we made a big mistake here. Somebody's math was wrong. And it's but for me, this is a little bit of a defining characteristic of who I am. Like, not even for a second did I think it would be okay to just stop. I was like, well, I have to finish the 100. Like, I'm not there yet. Like, of course I need to be done. Like, just because I hit the marker where I'd planned to be done, you know, I'm not there yet. I have to see it through. The workout comes first and the commitment to excellence comes first. And so it's just that pure stubborn streak, I think, that gets me through training.
I'm not going to talk too much about the Olympics experience because I want people to buy the book. Once again, Brave Enough, Jesse Diggins with Todd Smith. That's going to be out here next week. I want people to buy the book and you go into great detail about that race, the gold medal race. But I want to just say this as a fan myself, you went on the outside corner twice. You cut between two skiers and you won a all-out sprint at the very end. There's just two words for that. Badass. That is amazing because what you did, I mean, there's so many people that were in that same exact situation would have quit because you had to literally take the toughest course to win and you did it.
Oh, thank you. Well, it was fun working on those chapters because it was, you know, I had to really put myself back in that moment. And it's fun to share with readers, like, here's exactly what I was thinking, real time strategic decisions, why I made those decisions, why I moved when I did and how I did. And it's really fun to share that because I think cross country skiing, you know, for a long time, people kind of thought, oh, they just put on planks of wood and they slide around in circles in the woods, you know, like that's what they do. And yeah, we can do that. But for sure, the sport is so dynamic and powerful and there's strategy and tactics involved. And it's really fun to get to share that incredibly exhilarating side of the sport with fans. So yeah, it was really, really a hoot to write those chapters.
After you won the gold, I mean, obviously this is you created a standard for the U.S. cross country ski team. Did the rest of the world treat you differently? Well, was all of a sudden it was no longer, oh, there's the United States, they'll finish 12th. You know, was all of a sudden like, okay, now we've got to really take these guys seriously.
Yeah, you know, I think that has happened, but it's been a little more gradual than the Olympics because I think by the time we got to the Olympics, like I had multiple World Cup podiums. We had multiple wins from not just myself, but a lot of members of our team were on the podium and winning races and showing like, hey, you know, give me the right skis and on the right day, I can nail this race. And so I think, you know, gradually over time, we had shown that we're here to play and we're here to win and we're serious competitors, but also we have a lot of fun. And I think we've had a lot of respect from the rest of the World Cup crew, as we respect every other team, you know, like you see people, the level of sacrifice and training and just guts that you have to get to that level, you got to respect it. And so I think there's this amazing camaraderie on the World Cup. And I have friends from pretty much every single team around the world because, you know, yeah, at the end of the day, you line up on the starting line and you want to beat the person standing next to you, but also you have to respect what it took for them to get there.
And all you have to do, by the way, is take a look at Jesse's career. You'll see quite a few podium stances, including a lot of championships over her career. Keegan, when you raced with her, I believe she was mid-30s. We got Beijing coming up here in 2022. Italy, I think, is in 2026. I'm presuming you're planning on being at the next few Olympics, correct?
Oh, I'm not making any promises. Okay. I have to qualify first. But
okay.
I am for sure planning on racing through the end of the Beijing Olympics. And after that, I'm gonna see, I'm going to take it day by day. And I've always said, if I'm not enjoying and loving what I'm doing, then I'm going to know it's time to retire. Because it takes so much work that if you're not absolutely loving the process and the training and the travel and the absolutely incredibly gut-wrenching process of tearing your body apart every time you race, then it's not worth it. But if you're loving it, then regardless of results, this is, there's nothing else in the world I would rather be doing. So I think as I get older and I have, other goals on the horizon as well, and family goals and all sorts of other things going on, I'll see how I'm feeling. But right now in this moment, it still feels like I could be skiing forever. I'm absolutely loving what I'm doing, and I feel like this is, there's literally nothing else in the world that I would rather do.
And I hope you do, because you make me proud to be Minnesotan, you make me proud to be American, and you're just one of those people that is just, you're so kind of, you give people hope, you give people great memories, and people just enjoy you. This is just such a treat for me. I got to tell you the truth, I'm geeked out talking to you. And I mean, I talk to a lot of people, and I'm like, I don't get excited about this, but I'm just deeply inside a little kid doing, somersaults right now, because talking to you is just a delight.
Oh, man, I'm not actually that cool.
I think your actions, all that stuff changed that. No, you are that cool. And it just, thank you very much. I appreciate the time today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Love being a guest.
Brave Enough, Jesse Diggins with Todd Smith. The book is out next week. Jesse, thank you very much. All my best on these next upcoming races you have, and we hope to see you in Beijing.
Awesome. See you there.
Take care.